Welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we embrace the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. For many of us, this time of life is a kind of rebirth. Your experience may be similar to that of my guest today. Husband out of town for the weekend, and her son says, "Mom, I'm 16 now, and after 16 years of spending my Friday evenings with you, I'm heading out with my friends." All reasonable. Except for the realization that you don't really have much of a life outside your family and perhaps a job. No exciting direction, no passion project. And you sort of go, crap, what's next? There are all sorts of excuses why you can't do whatever it is you might want to do. But Anne has a different concept for you. Learn while you earn. Don't be that alleged expert trying to stay two steps ahead of your audience or clients. My conversation with Anne is fun and informative and makes so much sense. I hope you give it real consideration. I am. Listen now. Dreams don't have expiration dates. How's that for a lead-in? Many of us have had dreams of bigger things, better things, designing the model for world peace. Seriously, though, as young people, we often have grand plans. For me, I longed to be an archaeologist in a foreign land. And then, of course, there was the day that then Prince Charles threw me over for a younger woman. And life goes on, or life happens. For many of us women, there's marriage, kids, homemaking, hopefully a career, but at least a job. And then we reach mid-age. Life is fine. At least such a cop-out word. But we know something is missing. From the outside, our life looks like a success. So it can be hard to talk about it out loud. We'd sound unappreciative, peevish, and that never gets any sympathy. And then there's a landmark birthday. For some it's 50. For me it was 60. And we realize there's less time going forward than there is in the rear view, and then it matters. There might be a dream from our youth. There might be something that really struck a chord sometime during our adult life. Even if we move on it, we're stuck in the how. Or we have imposter syndrome. Or that confidence we had at 22 has fled the scene and we convince ourselves we wouldn't be any good at it anyways. Does any of that sound familiar? But dreams don't have expiration dates. Did I say that already? And my guest today is here to prove it. Anne Alexander Cedar, welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we embrace the journey.
Oh, Agnes, thank you so much. Wow, that was just such a beautiful introduction. I literally got chills twice while you were saying that. Yeah, because, I mean, you really hit on so many of the challenges, the desires, the back burner dreams that I think women of a certain age, especially women, men too, but women, I think, in some ways more than men, really kind of deal with. And it was beautifully said.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And I mean, that was me. You know, it's interesting. And I'm just going to add in here too that when we exclude men, it's not like you don't have the same experience, men. This is the podcast for Boomer Women, so we talk about women. Okay. Now, and your story is one that might freeze our listeners with fear, or it might make them lean in. You were an actress, and you are an actress again.
Yes.
Can you tell us about your younger days in the U.S. and about your decision to go back to acting in a second language in a foreign country at 47?
Yeah. So I, you know, from the time I was 17 to the time I was 28, I studied acting. I went to a conservatory style school, and then I pretty much got out there and started working. And yeah, I worked my way up. I would say by the time I was 27, 28, I was earning enough money that I didn't have to have a side hustle. I was had my health insurance paid for through SAG. So I was doing okay. You know, you don't need a ton of money when you're that age, but and you don't need a ton of security, or at least I didn't. So it was all good. I felt like I was really on the right track. Nothing major. I mean, I did some commercials and I did a lot of theater and had some small parts in movies and things like that. So it was just kind of your typical, actor's career for not the 1%, but the 3% who are actually making their living as an actor. And then, as life does, it kind of threw me a curveball in the shape of this hot German guy. And that's how I ended up in Germany. And honestly, I didn't speak German when I first got here. So, apart from the five words that all Americans have, kindergarten, Gesundheit, Zeitgeist, whatever, and Pfaffignügen, I don't know if all Americans have that one, but that was my specialty, which
That's
means the
something to do with
pleasure of
driving, isn't it?
driving.
Yeah, I
Yes,
was gonna
it
say,
is.
I
Very
listened
good,
to one
very
of your
good.
episodes.
Yes. And yeah, and then we started to have kids right away, or a child right away, not kids, one singular. But in any case, I became a mom and a wife pretty much immediately. And that coupled with my lack of German, I just honestly didn't see a way forward with it. Then flash forward 16 years, I had in the meantime, just a little quickie in there, I had always been earning my money acting adjacent. So I was doing voiceover, I was doing commercials, I was doing presenting, but that wasn't what I signed up for. So I what in your intro, you mentioned how we can often struggle with feeling, you didn't say this exactly, but it was what I took from it, feeling ungrateful for what we have. And feeling like, do we have the right to want more? And I really struggled with that during those 16 years because I had and I have a beautiful family, and I was very lucky to somehow continue working and earning, a living doing acting, even if it wasn't the acting that I wanted. So I really struggled with that, not grateful for it. And then when my son was about 16 years old, we had a standing movie date on Friday nights, and he came to me on the Thursday before and said, "Mom, oh, don't be angry, but I don't want to hang out with you on this Friday or any Friday going forward."
Break your heart.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it was interesting. It was the first time, I think my husband was away golfing that weekend, but it was the first time in 16 years that I had a chance to think about what do I want to do? Just me, nobody else. What do I want to do? And the answer was I just wanted to have some fun, and my idea of a good time was to take an acting workshop. So I just, on a whim, sat down and Googled acting workshop Munich English, and one popped up. There was a coach out of LA with one spot open, with a workshop starting the very next day.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And I whipped out my credit card, I signed up for it, and left the workshop realizing a couple of things. One, that there had been this pilot light burning for my passion for acting inside of me this whole time that I wasn't even aware of. And at the end of it, this workshop, it just had combusted into flame. And the other thing that I realized was life is short, and I wanted to give it another go. And at that time, I was 47. I came home, told my husband, and he's like, okay. He had no idea what any of that meant. But then I was kind of faced with the first challenge, the how that you mentioned, right? So, how do you do that? And I think, as with all challenges, what people mostly do is they look at their challenge as this, not only the mountain, but the entire range of the Alps behind it as well. And they don't know how to get over that or get beyond it. And really, the first challenge is, are you wearing the right shoes? Have you packed? Are you ready for this trek? So breaking things down to their very base kind of of components. And my first challenge was I was rusty as heck. I had not acted in 16 years. Not really, you know, not the kind of acting that I wanted to get into again. And so I needed training. And then the second challenge became, okay, well, I don't want to be flying to London, New York, LA, Chicago, Atlanta, because that's expensive, time and money. And so how do I bring that training to me? And I reached out to the coaches that I wanted to work with and asked them, what's it going to take to get you here? And they told me, and I sat down with a pencil and piece of paper and figured it out and realized that I could get them here if I could just get a handful of other actors to take the workshops with me. And I thought, well, I can do that. I can do that. And then I started to reach out to other actors, and before I knew it, I not only had enough actors to, my original goal was really just to get the training for the same price I would pay if they were already in Munich. But what ended up happening was I was getting free training. I was earning a couple thousand, $1,000 to $2,000 per workshop. And I was building a community that I had no idea how valuable that was going to become until later. But those were kind of the three main things off the bat. And that was kind of my long-winded answer of how I came back to it.
I want to go back for a moment because it just hit me flat at the head, against the head. When you said your husband is away golfing and your son comes to you and says, Mom, I have a life now on Friday nights, and it's not you, right. Is how many of us women, mothers, wives, whatever, suddenly reach a stage where it's like, I don't have a plan B.
Yeah, for
you know,
sure.
Like, suddenly, like, what am I going to do tonight?
Yeah.
I guess I'll open a bottle of wine by myself, you know, that sort of.
Right,
but, yeah. You know, I always joke about bottles of wine, but just that empty feeling of everybody has something except me.
Yeah. And I mean, even just like we get reduced, right? I was Mark's mom for years. I still am Mark's mom to a lot of people. Or Matthias's
wife. I was even the dog's
wife.
Mom.
Right.
Oh my God.
That's right. You meet people at the dog park and you're, oh, Zoe's mom, right? My dog is Zoe. Right?
So, you don't, nobody knows your name.
No. And it's so interesting, and this is kind of aside to it, but my stepmother was she recently died, but she was 99 and a half years old, so she lived a good, strong, long life, so no sadness there. But she came from a different generation. She was born in the early to, you know, 1900s, and so as soon as I got married, she started addressing letters to me as Mrs. Matthias Cedar. I was like, where am I in that equation? I've just been swallowed up into somebody else's identity. And I did not like it. I really didn't like it. I really fought against it. But I think it's something that really happens. And then when that day comes, we've spent so long being and doing for the people we love that you have to remember that you're still in there. And you are still valuable. And this was one of the things that I really fought for when I returned, and that I still, you know, try and help other women to realize is, what kind of an example are you giving your kids, for example, if your life means nothing the minute you become a mother, other than as this nurturing vehicle that is a part of you, but it is not all of you. There is so much more to you. And it doesn't mean that part has to be any less, but it means recognize and embrace the God-given talents and curiosities and intelligence and passions and all of those things that you have inside of you that you were, I'm getting off a little bit on a tangent, but no. I am passionate
about
this.
Welcome to the boat.
Yeah. I really feel like our curiosities are the key to unlocking our purpose on this planet. They will lead you to your passion, and the passion is really, you know, where. But too many people are afraid to follow that road. And it really, it doesn't, and it, you also mentioned imposter syndrome in your intro. And I think that there is a lot of that out there, especially like if you had something going on when you were younger and there's this long break in between and now you're like, well, I can't do that anymore. I haven't done it. It's not current. I mean, who am I in that industry now or whatever it may happen to be? And there are, what I have found is there is more than one way to build a bridge back to your purpose. And first of all, being open to just letting your curiosity help you to decide if that bridge is going to go left or right or straight or curvy or whatever it is. But second of all, in acknowledging and embracing your beginner status, it's not a negative, it's a positive, because you're leading with authenticity. And then you are sort of, the people who resonate with that will be drawn to you. And the people who don't, won't. But that doesn't matter because we don't need everybody. We just need a few people.
Well, and you two talk about, you also talk about, you know, when your son was 16, so you were out of the acting arena for 17 years, whatever it was.
Right.
Some of our listeners might have 3-4 kids more. They could be out of that environment wherever they want to be for like up to 30 years.
Yep.
So I really want them to know that it doesn't matter if it's 16 years or 30 years, you might have to work a little bit harder on yourself if it's been 30 years, a little bit more self-talk, but all the same rules apply.
Absolutely. My oldest client is 71 years old. And so there you go. I mean, dreams do not die. They just, either people let them go rest, but you know, I always say we are all going to lay down for that big sleep one day. And apparently there's some movie that plays before we do that. And I know I don't want to be screaming, change the channel. I want to be happy with the movie that's playing in my head or in my eyes or however that works out. So, and it's, you know, the thing that they always say is people don't regret. They don't regret
what they did do.
The things they've done. Right. They regret the things they didn't do.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
I was going to say, and recently I was speaking with another guest, and I mentioned the fact that, you know, on our tombstone or memorial, whatever it is, there's our beginning date and our ending date and the dash in between. And I've heard comments about what is your dash all about?
Oh, okay.
You know, because it's not about the first date and the second date, the last date. Our life is that dash,
yeah.
and just how important it is.
Yeah.
To have something to show there.
Yeah. Well, I think also at the end of the day, we all want to know that our life has meaning, that it had a purpose, that we weren't just randomly here to live out some procreative life and then crawl into the ground and, you know, never to be seen again. I think, and the only way to really matter is if you can positively impact other people in some way or form. And that doesn't mean, you know, whether that's 3 people, 3,000 people, or 3 million people, that's up to you, the listeners. But you have to know that for you, what you define as meaningful and purposeful. But if we matter to no one, then what was it all for?
Yeah. And I think that sort of a thought only comes in hindsight.
Yeah.
So, you know, if nothing else, perhaps our talk here today can be just a reminder that you don't want to get to that deathbed, whatever it looks like, and go like, well, crap, I wish I'd done something, you know, whatever mattered to whatever, done something, you know, whatever it is. You don't want to have that hindsight. You want your hindsight to be, oh my goodness, it may only have been one person. And I hear people say this all the time that are moving on their dreams. If I can help just one person, I'll consider myself a success.
Yeah, so. It does make a difference when you know you're impacting other people in a positive way. It really does.
And as you say, if only as a role model. So, you know, we may be able to teach things, but we also don't know who's watching us.
Yeah. Well, your kids are.
Yeah. No,
I can
absolutely.
Tell you that. Yeah. If nobody else, your kids are watching you. You know, and it is true. You're right. You don't know who's watching. You don't know who you can inspire with having the courage to not give up on yourself. And really, you know, like when I was young, I think I thought, you know, grown-ups, whatever that means. I still haven't figured that out yet, right? 58. But grown-ups are not afraid of anything. And fear is for the young and the inexperienced and all of that. And what I've realized is that fear really never goes away. And it's just a couple of things. One, I used to see my fear as the saboteur. You know, like, you're just trying to sabotage my dreams, right? And if I even recognized it, because fear will often show up as logic, you know. And because and now I realize that fear is more like a helicopter mom. And it's really just trying to keep me safe. And what it doesn't know, it fears, it considers unsafe what is ever outside of my comfort zone. So I've now come to embrace that feeling, you know, that sort of, ooh, should I do this? Should I not do this? Kind of a you know, before you jump out of the airplane type feeling. That is the proof that I am doing something that I'm on the precipice of growing. I'm about to do something that is stepping outside of my comfort zone, and I'm about to learn some interesting things. And I just don't let fear stand in front of me anymore. Now it can stand to the side. It can give its advice, but don't block me.
What I hear you doing too is you're redefining fear.
Yes.
As, okay, something's up. You know, like, I got my spidey senses out there and they're just going crazy, but something's up and it could well be exciting. You know,
yes.
Sort of redefine fear as something exciting might just break loose.
Yes. And do you know where I got that from? So as an actor, obviously, we deal with some pretty stressful situations, especially in-person castings, in-person auditions, which are less and less these days. But for callbacks, a lot of times we'll still have to be in person, which means the stakes are super high because they've become so rare. They don't happen very often, so you don't have a lot of practice doing them anymore. Most auditions take place in something called a self-tape, and makes you nervous. And so when I started having those and, you know, really getting nervous around them, I would just tell myself, because the physiological symptoms are the same between nervousness and excitement. So you get that feeling in your stomach, you may sweat, your throat gets dry, your digestion stops, you know, all of the, you feel like you have to go to the bathroom. These are all the same types, or at least I do. These are all the same types of things that happen when you're excited as well. So you can reframe that in your head by, instead of, because I think the monologue that many people will fall into is, oh God, I'm so nervous. I'm so nervous. Oh, I'm so nervous. Oh, I don't feel well. Oh, I'm so nervous. You know, and it's just making it worse and worse and worse. And instead, just stand there like Superwoman for a minute, raise your arms in the victory V, and start telling yourself how excited you are, how this is going to be amazing. And you would be amazed how well that works. This is going to be fun. This is going to be great. And no matter what happens, I am going to come out of this with something good, even if it's just a lesson, you know.
I actually watched something from Tony Robbins yesterday, and he talked about, he had people like just going crazy and,
yeah,
too bad we don't have our video here, but going crazy and dancing around and really putting out all that energy. And he said, you cannot right now be like, once you've done that, you're so pumped that you can't play small.
Yeah.
You know, so even if you do that before something, and the other thing, we're talking sort of about acting. Well, we're talking about acting, but also everybody else's world. And I've seen interviews with some of the most famous actors out there who still had to audition.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, so here, same rules apply. It's not just because you're starting out. It's not just because you don't have the experience. It's just the process. And
yeah,
so figure it out, go in, doing
well,
the best
and
you can
these
do.
Kind of things can always be applied to every, I mean, you know, actors are people too, and we're dealing with human situations, you know, high stakes situations, whether you are an actor, a baker, a candlestick maker, it doesn't really matter. If it's important to you, the stakes become high. And how do you deal with that? And what do you do about it? There are so many, it's so interesting now that I've sort of gone also into the realm of coaching, how I think I was so kind of secular, you know, with acting and actors and all of that. And the only time I ever peeped my head out was for my family, kind of, that I didn't realize how many things can sort of be brought out and applied to people and their situations, like, you know, interpreting nervousness as excitement. I mean, that can be applied to anybody, right? I mean, I just gave you the specific circumstance of an audition, but it could be anything, you know? And I forgot my train of thought.
That's
I
okay.
Totally lost
it. You're actually going exactly where I want you to go, because through this, passion project to pro was born.
Yes.
Can you tell us sort of what were your experiences? What did you hear from other people that made you realize that this is the norm, probably, and too many people have put their dreams on hold, so you're going to come up and rattle the cage?
Yeah. Well, apart from, like, I know obviously a lot of actors, and they are still pursuing their dreams, but I also coach actors as well. So there are two kind of programs that I do. And one of the actors that seem to gravitate to me are the ones very similar to me, and that they have a long hiatus between having had an acting life when they were young and now they're coming back to it. So that was sort of like the first kind of epiphany. People, you know, have dreams beyond, you know, from their youth that they wish they could warm up those leftovers and, you know, make them edible again. But I also, with my husband, we have all of our whole friends circle, nobody is an actor. Nobody's in the industry. And I kept seeing again and again and again how many people are not happy with the jobs that they're doing, you know? I mean, there's really no better way to put it, honestly. They're just, it's like they do it because they need the money, or they do it because they've reached this point in their career that to not do it, they wouldn't be able to support their lives anymore, you know, their lifestyles anymore. They're sort of trapped. And I think that most people accept that as just like, you know, that's the price of admission if I want this life, if I want to continue, if I want. And they don't realize that there are ways to warm up those old dreams and make them really into a brand new thing, and that works for you at this stage in your life. And I just found myself, especially with that circle of friends, or when I would meet people, you know, on the airplane, you get to talking, whatever it would happen to be. And I would always have, you know, like, well, you could do that. Well, all you would need to do is, you know, is start reaching out to the person that you're, you know, blah, blah, blah. And really going back to how I initially built that bridge from my passion back to acting, back to what I consider my purpose. And in fact, since we spoke, Passion Project to Pro has evolved to kind of Passion Project to Purpose, because I think it is a better description of what it truly is. Because maybe you don't want to make it your profession, but you want it to be a meaningful part of your life. And so what I realized is that so many people would really like kind of a step-by-step how-to. How do you do that? I mean, it's easy for you to say you just reached out to all those people, but then how did you figure it out? And how did you find the other participants? And how did you know what to charge? And how did you know what kind of a event to do? And how did you find the venue if you did it, you know, not online? And all of these questions. And so that it was kind of born out of people asking me all of these questions and then still not doing it, even when they had the answer.
And it's interesting. I'm going to interrupt for just a second, because what I heard when I was making some major changes, including giving up the 9-to-5, is people would say, well, that's okay for you, Agnes, because you're smart and you're brave. Mm. Well, yeah, but so are you. You just have to take passion project
and
to
you
purpose.
Know what? Well, that's true too. But I also want to say about that, that is our beliefs. That goes to a limiting belief that person has about themselves, that they are not that type of person. You are brave and you are, you know, strong and you can do it. And by when they say something like that, what they're saying next to that is, and I am not. And that is just a belief. And beliefs are not facts. They can be challenged. And what I always encourage everyone to do when you come up against a belief that does not serve you is to first ask yourself, is this a fact or is this a belief? 9 times out of 10, it's a belief. And if it's a belief, we all had debate team in high school, or at least I did in Michigan where I grew up. But we all know what a debate team does, right? And generally, it doesn't matter whether you believe the side you're on or not. You still have to argue for that side. And so this is what I really encourage people to do when they come up against a belief that doesn't serve them, is just for the sake of the argument, argue the other side, because we are all victims of confirmation bias. And you will look for the proof of whatever you believe to be true. So when you begin to look for the proof of the opposite side, you will find it because it's out there. And so really look inwards and think about, there must be a time in your life when you acted boldly, when you did something out of character, right? And if you did it once, even if you can only find one time, you can do it again.
Okay, I just went down on my notes here because I have in my notes, isn't that also a time to remember the hurdles we have overcome? Learning all the things we had to learn, from cooking and how to wash an expensive sweater so it wouldn't shrink, or how to turn on a computer and send an email, or helping aging parents navigate the healthcare system. If we can do that, if we can learn how to do those things and all the other things, we can learn how to overcome fear and take control of our path.
So beautifully said. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I got the chance to write it out.
Absolutely. No, it's, yeah, it's, you're a good writer, Agnes. But what made me make the program and the way I've built the program was having all these conversations, giving people the information that they needed and seeing them still not act. And I realized there was a missing piece for them. They wanted the hand-holding in the launch as well, in the creating the event. So the way I've structured Passion Project to Purpose is that, you know, we go through all of the steps, you know, creating everything. But in week 5 of the 6-week program, everybody goes off and does their event, whether that is, you know, a romance novel authorship or bakery, you know, cake decorating or refurbishing furniture, foraging for edible fauna, homesteading, it doesn't really matter. Anything that you can learn in a workshop, a retreat, or a seminar, you can use that to build the bridge to your purpose, to your passion. So everybody goes off and launches their event over a two-week hiatus between the fifth and sixth week. And then we all come back in the sixth week and we talk about, okay, what went well and what are you going to do better next time? What lessons did you learn? And what can you learn from everybody else, from what they did? And once you've done something once, you have the courage and the knowledge to know that you can do it and the confidence to know that you can do it again.
You know, this podcast is in its sixth season. And wow. I mean, I was fortunate enough to start out speaking with a friend who was so interesting. She was well-traveled. She'd been a research journalist. Can't remember what they're called. But then she decided she couldn't do it anymore. So I was so hooked that I said, I got to keep on doing this. And I think this is what you're saying too, is my first four episodes, I was interviewing friends.
Yeah.
And then I was sort of, in air quotes, stalking more people in groups I belong to. And then when I finally found my guest matching platform, it's become a lot easier. But, you know, you start with what you've got, and it does take on a life of its own. Do you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, one of my favorite things to say is imperfect action is better than no action. Just do it. Start messy. You can always clean up later, you know? But you know, the perfect example is I'm also a screenwriter. So the perfect, you cannot edit a blank page. You have to write something, even if it's crap. Sorry, but, you know, you have to have something. And so whatever it is, just start taking those small steps. I think people think that getting outside of their comfort zone means they've got to like take a running leap and, you know, land 3 meters in the sand somewhere outside of it. That you can take teeny tiny little baby steps. It, you know, just take consistent teeny tiny little baby steps.
You also talk about curating experts. Mm-hmm. I have another story about that, but you talk about it first.
Well, this to me was because, you know, we live in this world of there's so many people who are coaches and who want to be coaches, especially since the pandemic. And I think many, 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 many people have been kind of have bought into, I only need to stay two steps ahead of the people I'm teaching in order to teach. And I think that leads to imposter syndrome for one, because you're always looking over your shoulder. Oh my gosh, are they going to catch up to me? I don't know. You know, and it makes you feel like you can't say, I don't know, let's figure this out, you know, because you are the one who is supposed to have all the answers. And this imposter syndrome, I think, happens because people don't know another way to turn their passion into a side income or their main income other than by teaching it. And what I have found through Passion Project to Purpose and the, you know, before it was that, was just curating these experts, bringing in experts, coaches, let them be the expert. Let them teach your workshop, teach your event, teach your seminar, teach your retreat. And it frees you up to be the learner, to learn, to truly embrace that, your beginner status or whatever status you have. Maybe you're an intermediate. Maybe you're a professional learning from professionals. But whatever you are now free to learn and enjoy the experience along with everybody else. Once the organization is done. So that's what curating experts and coaches what I have come to learn that it does for me as a person who's done it many, many, many times.
Where I wanted to follow up is the fact that a lot of people are going to say, why would an expert do anything for me? Like, you know, I'm just this lowly person. A lot of people have heard of Seth Godin.
Yes.
He's a thought leader. Okay, so you know the name. Yes. After he came out with his book, Purple Cow, mm-hmm. I was in a group and they were talking about business cards. And I don't know if it still exists, but there was a site called like Moo.com or something.
Oh, I
like
love Moo. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. So you know exactly where I'm going with this. I made the joke of, because of Purple Cow, I wonder if Seth Godin gets his cards from Moo. And somebody said, Agnes, I dare you to ask Seth Godin that question. Now, you know, I'm learning a lot about Agnes here. Yeah, I'm going to rise to the challenge often if the dare, double dare is reasonable. So I got an email address for Seth Godin, and I said, the reason you're getting this email is because I was dared to ask you, since you wrote the book Purple Cow, do you get your cards from Moo? Knowing there was not a hope in hell that he was going to respond.
I bet he did.
He did. It was short. It was sweet. It was humorous. I can't remember exactly what he said now. But he responded to a woman that he'll never see because she was responding to a dare. You know, so experts are people
no,
too.
No, can I stop you there for a sec? Because I don't think he responded just because it was a dare. He responded because you reached out to him authentically with a compelling hook. The dare was the hook, right? And you also, by writing that and asking the question, you gave him an easy way to respond. All he had to do was write one or two sentences. You weren't asking for the skin off his neck, off his nose. You weren't asking for his firstborn child. You weren't asking for anything big. You made it easy. So there were three things you did really well with that, Agnes. And I love that he responded to you. So it's also, you know, I think sometimes we underestimate giving someone the chance to be the person they would like to be by being the kind of person who responds to a nice woman's funny little email is also a give in a sense. But you did it right, and that's why he responded. And so it's learning how to reach out in ways that actually builds a connection. Now, you probably could have responded again, and he may or may not have responded to that. But I mean, you could be the person out of nowhere that Seth Godin has an email, you know, correspondence with every few months or something. You know, you may have been able to parlay it into that. But the other thing is when you're curating these coaches, experts, influencers, whatever your thing is that you want to do, you have to realize you are offering something of value. First of all, you are offering to pay them. That is hardcore value, you know. Second of all, you are offering to give them a platform to share their knowledge and expertise with other people who then have the opportunity to go deeper with them if they so choose. So you are giving them something of extreme value. So it's not about who am I to ask this big person. I mean, you may not want to start out with the top of the top of the top, right, in whatever industry that you're interested in. But, you know, when I first started my podcast, my very first guest, I have no idea why she said yes, but maybe I answered my own question just a minute ago, was the casting director, Tusa Lande. And she is the casting director from Scepter, Skyfall, the Millennium Trilogy, the television series Caliphate. So major, 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 major stuff. And I told her I'm starting this podcast and I would really love to interview you. And she came on as my very first guest. I didn't even know what the heck I was doing. And, you know, I think if you don't ask, you don't get your answer. and asking, what's the, as my dad always used to say, what's the worst that can happen?
Nothing changes.
Exactly.
That's the worst.
And then you move on to somebody else. And somebody is going to see the value in what you're doing and what you're offering.
Well, and I'm going to add the other side of a, it's a different story, but the other side of this particular subject is in the way that we do online. I cannot remember. I managed to connect with a young man from, I'll say China. I can't remember if it was Hong Kong or whatever. And we were back and forth just emailing, just little business tidbits here and there. And he, I don't know how he'd found me because he reached out to me. And then he reached out and said, would you be a guest on my podcast? Now, I was early enough in this online career that I procrastinated. I did everything. And one of the reasons for that is somehow, as you did, he managed to get major online thought people on his program. And I'm going like, I don't know how he did that, but I can't compare with that. Like, I am so small. And I never did quite respond. And then he got offered this amazing job and he stopped his podcast. So the opportunity for me was gone. And it took a long time for me to quit kicking myself because podcasts are out there for eternity. You know, like for someone to find, you know, smart thinker, amazing thinker, and brilliant person out there, and then Agnes as well. It's like that might pique some curiosity, you know, in terms of advancing my career. So yeah, you sometimes when you snooze, you lose.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, why not you? This is what people don't ask themselves enough. And again, that was that why me thing was a limiting belief, right?
Absolutely.
That needed to be challenged. And I mean, you know, we will all face, hopefully, we will all face scary things in our life. Things that seem bigger than we are. Things that seem like we're not ready for them. But that's the only way you're going to grow is if you do that. How boring would your life be if you didn't start taking those risks, you know? And that goes back to the dreams don't have expiration dates. Don't let your life not be what you want it to be. This is your, you know, this is something else I tell my actors, but it applies to people. Actors are people too, so it applies to people, right? This is our one, if you think of this like a horse race, right? We have one horse in this one race. That's it. What are you going to do to make sure that your horse, you know, is standing in the winner's circle at the end?
There you go. I love those pregnant pauses. Now, I've got this next comment in quotations, which means I found it somewhere on your website.
Okay.
Small intentional steps.
Yeah. That goes back to the baby steps. This is, you must, so an intention, you know, people a lot of times have dreams. And dreams are great because they're like the wind in your sails, but the rudder is the intention, right? It's, you got to steer it. You have to put direction behind it. And with a dream, it's like a wish, a dream, right? It's like this amorphous thing that kind of floats up like vapor and dissipates into the universe. And it doesn't go anywhere. But an intention is like a forward moving arrow pushing you towards what you want. So this is why I say it's not just taking random steps. Take intentional steps. And they can be teeny tiny little baby steps. But as long as there is intention behind it, in it, and through it, you know, moving towards it, then you are going to be going in the right direction. And, you know, I say that in the right direction in quotation marks because there is no wrong direction. There is no wrong time. There is only now. and forward. And so, you know, I'm not trying to be Obi-Wan Kenobi or anything, but there is no point in shoulda, woulda, couldas. There is only, you know, what can I do now and moving forward? And we are all at exactly where we are supposed to be, no matter where you think you are in your journey, because this is where you are. Easy as that, you know?
Philosophy 101 here, right. Here first.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm sort of glancing at my clock here. What haven't I asked you? Our audience is mid-age women. When I say you've been there, what I mean is you've been at that precipice.
I have, I'm 58.
Well, yeah. I know, but I just mean though, you hit the precipice of like, what's behind me isn't enough anymore. It's not going to cut it. So for all those listeners out there that are at the precipice, is there anything we haven't talked about? You've given some real good tips, and we've really hit on some key things in our heads. Is there anything else?
Well, I mean, I can say that if you're looking, if the idea of doing an event around your passion, it seems like something that's interesting to you, I have a free workbook that would kickstart that. So they're welcome to that. I don't know if that's what you meant.
Oh, anything at all. But yeah? Could just expand a bit more on this whole event thing. Because what I think you said, and I think we sort of glossed over it, and we shouldn't have, is that you don't have to be the expert. You figure out where your sphere of interest is. I won't say influence, but your sphere of interest is that passion. And then you look for experts who can speak to that.
Yes.
And by being the chalice, I won't say bowl, that's too boring, that holds all of that information, that's how you can go into that sphere and you learn to be an expert along the way. Am I sort of...
Hey, you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly right. You can monetize your passion before you yourself are an expert or coach or whatever it is that you're aiming to be. And the other thing that's super valuable about it is you are building a community of other people who are interested in the same thing that you're interested in. And I think this is something else that we didn't touch on, but that is very common for people of a certain age, is that they get lonely. They don't know how to make friends anymore as adults. And, you know, we made friends easily as kids. It was as easy as running up to someone at the playground and saying, you want to play? And then later, when we had our own kids, it was like, well, my son wants to play with your son. Let's have a cup of coffee while they're doing that, right? And, you know, wives and husbands and all that stuff. But for us, for just us, it's hard to meet the people that you kind of resonate with. Like I become friends with my husband's, you know, friends, wives. I like them all, but I wouldn't necessarily have chosen them to be my friends. You know, we are friends now, but that was because we were sort of put together, but I wouldn't have chosen them. I hope that's not coming across terribly, but...
we would never have found them, put it that way.
I would never have found them, yeah. And I think, you know, this also goes to something similar to what I would always tell my son when he would, you know, despair, you know, teenagers about, you know, where he was going in life or that he didn't have a passion or things like that. And one of the things I always said to him was follow your curiosity. You just need to get moving and your curiosity will lead you to something. And that something may lead you to something else, but one day you are going to find the thing that sparks you. And he has, of all things, it's survivalism. God help me. You know,
doesn't need to help you. Your son is there for you.
My son is there. He's out there like building forts in the forest and, you know, like
My grandson is 15 and he always talks about when the zombie apocalypse comes,
My
Grandma.
son talked about that too. Yeah. So, I mean, and so there you go. I mean, even like these interests, that you forget about as an adult, they're there. They're still there wanting to prepare for the zombie
Oh, dear.
apocalypse. So I forgot what we were talking about, but there you
Yeah, and I
go.
had something really important to say too, but now that the zombie apocalypse is on the horizon. But
Interesting.
yeah, it's yeah, I liked what you said about two curiosity.
Yeah. And I think that this is something that's really important because I think a lot of people feel like they failed at life if they haven't found their passion. And this is where I always, just say, then follow your curiosity. First of all, it's never going to be boring. You're always going to be interested. And second of all, it will lead, oh, I know what I was going to say. It will lead you to where you want to go. So this is something I used to say to my son, when he would despair that he didn't have this passion. And I would say, you got to get on the road. And when you're on that road, doesn't matter if you are going to get off at the next detour, but you are going to meet people who are on that same road with you. And you're going to have things in common. And you're going to be at the same place. And you are going to naturally be able to develop relationships. We were talking about loneliness. Now it's all becoming clear. It's the 58-year-old fog, right?
Say too, like once again, I found my thought is that for those women who are saying, yeah, okay, I've identified my passion, but I don't know anybody else who would come to a workshop or a seminar or whatever, is between meetups, which I don't know if they're as big in Europe as they are in North
Yeah, I know
America, but
about it.
meetups are big. Social media, most of the social media has groups that you can join, and as long as you request permission from the admin of that group, you can often put it out there who's interested. I mean, this is my thought.
Absolutely.
So you don't need to know personally. You can collect, like, I don't know how well you knew all those other authors or actors that you reached out to, but it was a good place to start, and then you got
Exactly.
results. You got better results than you were expecting.
For sure. And there are, you don't have to limit yourself, honestly, to just social media or, those kind of things. You can also go to your library, do the old-fashioned thing, tack it up on your supermarket billboard. There are also community centers. There, it depends what it is. There are also maybe say you're interested in pottery. You have a pottery wheel and you would like to get together with other potters. I don't know. Something like that. Or maybe it's gardening. You have a passion for gardening and you would like to learn more about that and, be able to do that with people once a week or once a month, whatever it is. Go to your garden center. Go to the botanical center in your city, your town, your wherever you are. Look in the Facebook groups. That's a great start. But there are so many places without that. Even if you just Google, just like Toastmasters is great for people who want to do public speaking. There are meetups of people outside in real life, IRL, where people can get together. And you will find people. And again, you don't need more than a handful of people to make these things viable. And what it does is it opens you up to naturally develop friendships with people who you actually have common interests with.
I'm going to put it out there too for anybody that's listening. This is episode 277 of this podcast, you and I speaking. And I have interviewed the biggest variety of people I can imagine, as long as I can tie it back to boomer women somehow. So, browse back just through the, you don't have to listen to all of them. Just browse back through the show notes. See if there's somebody out there. I'll reach out to them for you. Just contact me and I'll reach out to them for you. So it's yeah, there's There's always a way. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Always. I mean, you know, depending on what it is, right? You can also go to the store, go to the, you know, there's always, somebody is trying to sell something. That's what makes it so easy to find the coaches and the experts, but it also makes it easy to find the participants. You just have to put it out there. And then it begins to grow on its own. You know, word gets around. Curate good coaches, curate good experts, and word will get around.
Okay, so I've had this back burner dream, so I'm going to go find, I got your website open right here. I'm going to go find that freebie because I have all sorts of plans. I got a flip chart that is just full of ideas. So you've just lit a match under my butt too.
Great.
Okay,
great.
Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
Absolutely. Well, first, let me tell you where they can find that workbook so your listeners can get it too.
Well, yeah.
That's at actboldtraining.com/P for passion 2, the number 2, so small case P 2. And I am everywhere. I'm on, you know, Instagram, Facebook, and Alexander Seeder, S-I-E-D-E-R. But maybe the easiest place to find me is on Linktree at @act_bold. And that's me responding to the DMs or whatever it may happen to be. Reach out. Say hi. I'll say hi back.
Okay. So you're going to send me all of those things that you just reeled off so that I don't have to,
as I edit, pause to write it all down.
That's great.
Yes.
Okay. Can I ask you a personal question before we close?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hallmark, Netflix, your second acting career has been really quite successful. Can you tell us something about some of your roles? Do you have a character type that you really like playing or?
Yes. Well, you know, we all have a brand, whether you're an actor or not, we all have a brand. And so it was only when I began to embrace not only what I wanted, but how I was also being perceived and just kind of, it's like, okay, this is what it is. So this is my energetic signature as I play high status, morally ambiguous women with a fierce heart.
Morally ambiguous.
Morally ambiguous women with a fierce heart. Yes. And I'm always playing the character. You're like, is she good or is she bad? You know, is she altruistic or is she selfish? You know, is she torn between her, I play a lot of moms as well. Is she torn between the love for her children or her own ambitions? Right? So, which, you know, life imitating art and art imitating life, right? So people can see you. This is something that I think a lot of people are not aware of. People can see you. And the casting directors are trained in the art of seeing you. And you have to get trained in it as well if you want to be able to manipulate, if you want to be able to, manipulate's maybe not the right word, if you want to be able to influence what aspects of you that they are seeing. But we all are dealt a hand of cards, and I can't, you know, none of us can, we can finesse them, but we can't just pretend like we don't have the cards in our hand that we have. And apparently I'm a strong woman, the way my face comes together, the way I move through the world, whatever it is, I have something about me that might be morally ambiguous, and I just will embrace it because it leads to very interesting characters, characters that are really not predictable, characters that have a lot of nooks and crannies and give me a lot to explore.
And I am going to add that they're characters that I, the listener, will not click on. I need to see the ending because I need to know for sure just who and what you are.
good. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's great. Okay. Your website link is in the show notes. All of the links that we just discussed are on your page at our website. And just for fun, I asked you this before we began. I'm going to add a list of some of your recent movies so people can check you out. See what morally ambiguous really means.
Yeah. Well, actually, the one that's playing right now, well, I'm not sure if it's still playing, is Heidelberg Holiday, which is the Hallmark Christmas film on Netflix. That one came about, it was interesting because I was only getting villains before that role. And I was like, ooh, I need to change my branding because they are only seeing one facet of me. And they're not seeing my heart, my humor, my, everything that I really cherish about myself, my playfulness and all of that. And they were casting me as like these really kind of like icy, standoffish women, which hopefully you can tell that's not who I am. And so I really worked on changing my branding. And then I got cast in this, super sweet movie as the doting concerned mom. And I was like, oh, I think I went too far. Okay, gotta pull back just a
I was thinking that morally
little
ambiguous, cold.
bit.
Gee,
No,
Hallmark?
no, no,
I
no.
thought
That was,
Hallmark was rebranding.
yeah. No, it was the effect of me saying, here, there's this other side to me as well. And now I've sort of recalibrated that again. But
Must be
yeah.
something right in the middle.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh dear, let the
Yeah.
pendulum come back to the middle.
Yeah.
Okay, listeners, we're all at that age now where time matters. We might have had a few regrets about not going for something or other that mattered in the past. Share your thoughts about that. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Maybe there was a question I didn't ask, Anne. Ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer. Share this episode. Most of the women I know had a dream that got put on the back burner. That information comes out at the most random times. It would be so much easier, so much more fun, to rekindle a dream if you did it with a friend. For support, for accountability, for laughter. You may never know if you don't share. If you enjoyed this conversation, click the follow button on your favorite podcast platform, and that helps us grow. I'm also registered at Substack. Following there is free, and you'll get notified every time an episode is released. Anne Alexander Cedar, thank you for being my guest today and reminding us that there is no expiry date on our dreams.
Agnes, it was my absolute pleasure. This was a really fun conversation.
It was fun. I wasn't quite sure when I was making my notes about, oh boy, she's an actress or actor. But no, I've had fun and I really appreciate, all the insights. Because, you and I are very similar in some regards.
Yeah, definitely.
So, have a great rest of the week.
Thank you.